Representative Mahoney, we'll hear your house file 3389 first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. If we don't have a forum, we can go through it, and then my witnesses can go over to the Senate, so that make sure they have to testify over there also. Mr. Chair, committee members, House File 3389 is a...
House File,
Incorporating into the Board of Workforce Policy Omnibus Bill. Hello, is there a platform, please?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Oh, maybe it's over here. Hang on. I'm looking for it.
There is a reason this can't settle on the phone, since we just got his bill and it's going to be a few days ago.
Mr. Chair, this has been heard in a couple of other committees. I don't know why it just got to you a couple of days ago. It certainly could have on its own, but it was going to be incorporated into the Senate's omnibus bill. I'd like to just think for process it would be simpler to incorporate it into the Senate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to hold over House File 3389. Mr. Chair, to get the bill into the correct order, I'd like to at this point move the A3 amendment. Mr. Chair, what the A3 amendment does, we have the 3389, it just moves the money from the Office of Science and Technology over the base salary of the director of that office and the funds that are in that office's budget account over to the authority. So there's no new money, we're just moving the money that is already in the Office of Science and Technology to the Authority of Science and Technology. And a quick history of this, last year we passed a bill that required a private sector led Science and Technology Initiative to develop a technology-based economic development strategy and provide investments and incentive programs to make Minnesota most competitive. They met over the fall and came up with the recommendation, and I think I passed out the executive secretary through the executive summary to everyone. What this does, this bill will create the Office of Science and Technology, not the office, but the authority, the Science and Technology Authority. Based on the Public Facility Authority, which gives them a little bit more of a firewall and makes it a less political issue as we try to do economic development. This is one of the points that the private-led organization group came up with and said that it's probably very obvious that economic development has become too political and that the less politics in it, the better. What the authority does is do the exact same thing as the office does, the Office of Science and Technology, so like I say, it gives them a little bit more of a firewall. It also creates an advisory board. You better find the exact place. On page 5, the Advisory Commission membership includes people from the University of Minnesota, MISCU, Mayo Clinic, executive officers, science-based companies, representatives from science-oriented, technology-oriented organizations, organized labor, venture capital community, and the angel investment community. And all these people are required to have experience in science and technology. Members, this is not a new concept. I wish we were reading on this, but we're not. We're copying states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, New York, California, Utah, all across the nation have developed these kind of programs. And they've done better than we have on their science-based, technology-based development. Return on investment across these states, I have that information with me if you'd like it. But on the low side, it's $10 in return on investment. On the high side, it's $120 return on investment per dollar. So members, pretty brief. I'm trying to keep this as brief as possible because I know how full our agenda is today. So I will stand for questions. Are any witnesses up if anyone has a question that I can answer?
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I'm just curious as to the, on the bottom of page three, there's the issue of whether you can sue or be sued as this authority. And I think the current OET, or Office of Science and Technology, would have been part of DEED, so it would have been not subject to suit unless the state gave it permission. So I'm just wondering if there's a distinction to be made there.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Meara, my understanding is this is that DEED can be sued and can sue, which is the same authority we're giving to this Office of Science, the Office of Science and Technology Authority. Getting the two mixed up this early in the morning. But yes, so...
So no change there?
No change there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Ms. Is DEED, where is DEED? You know, Representative Mahoney, like I said, this bill was didn't get to us until, I believe, Monday, final week, and, you know...
Mr. Chair, I can bring up Mr. Loftus, and he has indicated support from the department before. I hope he'll do it again.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Loftus, indeed, I absolutely do support the bill. If Mr. Chairman, it developed during the session. It wasn't something part of the governor's agenda to pull early enough in the process to do that. But January 15th, we issued the report and provided staff support to the committee, and in subsequent weeks have supported it and support the transfer and will assist the executive director and her transfer duties as well.
Mr. Chair, I will say in the bill, rather than go through a hiring process, I require the director of the Office of Science and Technology to be the director of the Science and Technology Authority, at least for the time being.
Mr. Loftus, is Ms. Farrell in the room at all?
I don't believe so. You have questions about the budget amount?
Well, you know, well, the budget may be just a transfer of whatever is left over there. I mean, what's this going to? We can't. DEED hasn't been exactly exemplary in, managing their budget, I guess, or in creating jobs, I don't think, in the last few years. And it's probably not your fault because you don't have much money to work with and you get hit every year the last 3 years. And now we're going to spin something off, and I don't know where the money's going to come from because. You know, well, it may be 107,000 or whatever it is here. I can imagine what this will escalate to, and I'm wondering who's going to suffer because of it. So, do you have any response to that, Mr. Loftus, or Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chairman, the base budget that pays for the executive director of the current Office of Science and Technology is, I believe, $107,000, and that's basically the salary and expenses. We've estimated there's a remaining $175,000 from the appropriation of last year. That
on top of the 107.
On top of the 107, so a total of $275,000, which would, and those other funds have been used for technical assistance contracts and matching grants for companies that are commercializing technology. So I believe that's an estimate. It may not be in the state budget system today, but that's an estimate based on looking at the end of June this year.
And so how are they going to give out, if their duties are to give out grants and the grants are going to be $50,000 or less, where's that money going to come from?
Mr. Chairman, in conversations we've had with the current executive director, we have discussed with her, made the final decisions yet, but whether she is going to be able to continue to make match with those funds, or she will need additional staff support, technical assistance to help her in the setup of the new authority. That, I think that remains to be seen, but within that additional roughly $170,000 of funds, we would look at that as an opportunity to either continue some of the small grants that she makes, or hire assistance to help set up a new authority.
Representative Mahoney, in your discussion with all the different groups involved in this, have you come up with an idea of what kind of money it would take to make this work?
Well, Mr. Chair, in the initial report, they requested $500,000 for funding at least. Mr. Chair, next year is next year. I'm going to fight for a lot more than $275,000. If we want the Department of Economic Development in this state to do anything, if we continue to cut them, they're not going to do anything. We have to invest money to make money. Certainly something or someone will suffer. But if you want to create jobs in the state, you have to spend money to create them. And we have to set up the framework in order to have that fight next year. And that's what this is doing. We can't continue to take money and away from our economic development forces in the state and then expect them to do anything of any value. And we can witness it with the problems that we're having with other states surpassing us in job growth. Mr. Chair,
I don't know, Representative Mahoney, if there's any job growth going on in this country right now.
Well,
tell you
Chair,
the truth. But
there is some job growth going on. Unfortunately, it's not in the business that I'm in. Construction industry. It's not in blue collar. It is, unfortunately, for people like myself, it is in a white collar job situation where there is any kind of growth.
And here comes Representative McElroy. Maybe we'll ask him what he thinks about the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority Act. You want to weigh in on this, Commissioner?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I want to thank Representative Mahoney for his leadership on this. I haven't seen the latest amendment, so I don't know if it has changed some. But in the form that Representative Mahoney introduced it, we are very supportive.
And Commissioner, do you have any idea what kind of money it will take to run this?
To run it?
And to give out the grants that are necessary to spur the job growth.
I don't...
And where the money would come from?
Absent some change in the budget, we would look to apply for a couple of federal programs that might be helpful. We would also work with the members of the group to try and be creative. I don't see any money in our existing budget that is likely to be very helpful. I want to keep doing the work we're doing on SBIR and STTR, for example. But we would work with the proponents and others to see if might be available, probably in federal grants. The federal EDA at the Department of Commerce does have a long-term planning grant program.
And Commissioner, but you don't need this legislation to apply for those grants. You could do it right now. Have you done it?
We think we'd have a better chance of qualifying for that with a structure like this in place. And we like the structure that Representative Mahoney has proposed.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner McElroy, how much is it going to cost, though, to run this program, minus the grants, just the administrative costs, hiring the director? I assume that there's other staffing. How many staff? What is the vision for all of that?
Well, the number that Representative Mahoney has suggested of $107,000, we can make work. We have people in place in our analysis and research division that do some work along these lines now. We think that's a reasonable number.
And Mr. Chair, just so the committee understands, let me share some information from my research on this. I'm pretty blunt. We had starved deep. This particular function in the state of New York has 28 people. This function in Pennsylvania has 16 people, full-time employees of the state, plus double that in contract. Wisconsin has 7. We have 1. We are looking to move forward.
Is that O-N-E or W-O-N?
One person, O-N-E.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We have one for a long time.
So, Commissioner McElroy, does the $107,000, does that include the per diem and any expenses that would be paid out to the 17 members on the board?
I don't believe you put them in for per diem, did you?
I thought it's in the bill.
I thought it was. Has that changed? Has that changed now?
Is it stricken? It's hard to tell. I thought I saw per diem for the members in here.
It's not listed in the $107,000.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't be that big of an expense. Representative Mahoney, you are right that we have starved deep, and that's what makes me nervous. And yesterday I had a number of 49ers in my office from my area, and every one of them was laid off, but the business agent in my office with them. And almost to a person, they complained about how the difficulty they were having in getting unemployment insurance. And then they complained about not being able to talk to a live person. When they did, they seemed to be frustrated and didn't get that much help. And, you know, we had this marriage between the Department of Economic Development and the Department of Economic Security, which became DEED. I don't know what kind of efficiencies were gained, but I do know that it seems that the deed is more oriented towards economic development, which has not been that exemplary, and that the UI problem continues sometimes to frustrate a number of us around here, and including a lot of our constituents. So now we start something new, and we all sitting around this table know that there's going to be a cost to it, and I just wonder where the money's going to come from. Representative Mahoney, you have supported fair tax increases as I have. But I don't know, you know, everything's been starved, not just deed, everything's been starved around here. So, Representative Anderson, do you have any more questions on it?
Just a couple more, Mr. Chair, if I could. You know, this is the first seeing it, and it was just posted yesterday, so I apologize. I haven't had a chance to go through it as well as I would like. Representative Mahoney, what will this new authority do that we can't currently do? And I know Representative Chair Rukavina has asked some of that already, but can you just give me an idea of what will this new authority give us that we, other than, I think Commissioner McElroy had mentioned perhaps accessing some federal grants, is there anything else that would be new under this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'd say the biggest thing that it's going to give us, the biggest two things that it's going to give us is more participation by private industry and private individuals in setting policy for this, recommendations for policy for this state. And it's going to give the private industry more confidence. Those are the two big things.
Mr. Chairman, if I could wait.
Commissioner.
The perception is important in economic development. We send the perception, send the message nationally that we are serious about continuing to be competitive. We've had some amazing successes, largely because of the strength of the cluster around bioscience and biomaterials and medical devices. Chemoplast, a large Danish company, chose Minnesota, chose Minneapolis as their South American headquarters back there. We competed with Atlanta and others. Nestle Nutrition chose the Twin Cities as their headquarters. Sage Electrochromics is a clean energy company, and we won that over a location in Rochester, New York. So it isn't that we don't win some. We could win more, and we think this idea sends the right message. It's also been very helpful in bringing together business, academia, the trade associations,
The process that got us here has been very helpful.
Well, it's good to see Commissioner McElroy and Governor Plenty growing government again, coming around to my line of thinking again. Representative Downey, do you want any comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I just want one more question.
Representative Anderson.
I noticed in here that there's a little section that gives the new board the authority to sue. What was the thought behind that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that's the question that Representative O'Miller asked.
I apologize, Representative Mahoney. I was trying to go through the bill as quickly as I could.
The answer, Representative Anderson, is that that is the authority that Deed has now. They can be sued and sued. That's the same authority that the Public Facility Authority has. They can sue and be sued. That's the same authority we're giving this. In case they will be signing and negotiating contracts, they have to have that particular authority in order to do those kind of contracts.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, being that you modeled this after the PFA, do you anticipate this being like a revolving loan fund eventually?
That's certainly up for, Mr. Chair, that's certainly up for discussion. That was not my intent when I started this, but whatever we can do to improve climate for technology-based economic development, I'm going to talk about, listen to, and try and work out.
And is the bioscience industry, either Commissioner or Representative Mahoney, are they going to be throwing some money into the pot here also?
Well, no one's signed a contract yet, sir.
Well,
but we're hoping.
Just don't sue or be sued. That's all. Okay.
I can send my witnesses over to the Senate.
We're going to have to vote to move this in to the Representative Mahoney moves to amend. Well, first of all, we have the amendment. The A3 amendment to the House File 3389. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Now, Representative Mahoney moves that House File 3389 as amended be incorporated into our Delete Everything House File 2781 that we're working off today as a workforce development bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So now we will take then House File 2781 members as amended right now. And I will move House File 2781 as amended. We recommend it to pass, and I believe this has to go to finance also. We really refer to finance members if you want to go through this. It's bills that we've heard in this committee. Representative Kalin's bill runs through page 4. Representative Briner's housekeeping bill is on page, starting at the bottom of page 4. And Representative runs through page 6. Representative Newton's bill that we heard last week for the veteran loan small business loan change is on page 6 and 7. Representative Mahoney's amendment to the Briner's bill on the Workforce Development Council is on page 7 and runs through page 12. Representative Obermuller's UID bill is on page 12 through page 16 that we heard, and Representative Obermuller's Department of Labor and Industry fees run from 16 to page 53, and that is, basically a longer bill. Representative Obermuller has got heavy lifting, but he's a farm boy now. If he was just an attorney, I was worried about it, but I think he's going to handle it.
You're giving away the secrets again.
He should have pulled that card years ago. I was picking on him for just being an attorney and the kid grew up on a farm.
Representative Murdoch's bill is on page 53 through page 63 that we heard. And Representative Briner, well, I got my bill that I heard yesterday on the issue dealing with the Power Sports, which I may pull out of here, members, because in my ability or my attempt to appease the Carlson brothers, I've made the unions unhappy, which think that language is, it doesn't work now, so I'll just move it along for now. You know, Representative Gunther, it's tough trying to be nice to everybody.
You work hard at it.
It isn't easy. It's continued then, starting on page 63, that's that language. And so, members, we've heard all the different parts of this bill. Representative Obermuller's bill on page 69 on the customer service was part of his UI bill, I believe, and then Representative Mahoney's amendment on page 69 basically wraps up the bill with Representative Obermuller's Department of Labor and Industry fees at the end of the bill. So, is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify against or for the bill? We pretty much have discussed all of these different programs. Any questions, Representative Dunn?
Mr. Chair, maybe this was posted some other time. Are we voting on this today, or would we have a chance? I'd appreciate a slightly more detailed walkthrough of the bill, maybe by staff. I know we saw most of this stuff, but I'm just trying to get caught up. I've not seen this before, I don't think.
Representative Downey, everything in this bill is that we've seen before, except Representative Mahoney's bill, which we just had a discussion on. Otherwise, everything in the bill, we've had a thorough discussion in this committee, but there's staff, Ms. Newman, would you care to maybe have a more thorough walkthrough than what I did? And would you, is there anything in this bill that we haven't seen or discussed? What amendments or anything in this bill?
Mr. Chair?
That we haven't had a chance to look at. Ms. Newman answer that question, please.
But before she does do that, Mr. Chair, I think since this was just posted last night, you and I spent until 11 o'clock in tax committee, you know, I think that out of fairness issue, it would be nice to have some time to review this here today. If members have some amendments that they'd like to offer, that would be helpful as well, if we had some extra time to do that. Or just time. Shouldn't even be extra time in general. So I don't know what your thought process was for today, if you were planning to recess and come back later, if you were planning to vote on this tomorrow or what. So
well,
what was your general plan?
Representative Anderson, I tried to get you the bill last night and gave it to Mike, I believe.
What time?
5:30.
Okay, and we were in taxes.
And but I thought there would be no problem with this bill because everything in here we've discussed in the committee, and there's really nothing controversial other than my bill, which I've made more controversial.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Chair. Did you grow up on a farm?
Actually, I grew up next to a mine pit.
Okay, so you're not a farm kid, so I can't give you that same level of trust that you've given Mr. Obermuller here today, that, you know.
I'm the son of a miner and a cleaning woman, so.
I'm just saying, you don't have that A credibility, so if we
so
could,
hold on just a second now. Let me get this straight. You're going to trust a farm kid who's now an attorney more than you're going to trust
We're kindred spirits
the
here.
I was a paper boy since I was, I mean, you hurt my feelings.
I'm just saying.
But I will lay it over if the rest of the committee feels that way. I don't know what is in this bill that we haven't discussed.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, tradition has been that members get an opportunity to see what these omnibus bills are. We take a break, you get an opportunity if you have amendments that you want to have drafted to it, and then we come back and do amendments. That's been a long-standing tradition here at the legislature.
And Representative Anderson, I don't disagree with you at all. But usually when you put a bill together, you have a little more time than what we've been given, number one. Number two, a lot of new things show up in omnibus bills on occasion, and there's absolutely nothing in here that's either new nor controversial. Is there anybody in the audience?
Mr. Chair, you are missing the point, though, that there might be members that are interested in doing amendments. And without having that opportunity to go through the bill and see if they want to do that. That's the whole point of the, that's what you guys tell us all the time on House Floor, that that's the whole point of the committee process, so.
Representative Anderson, we do have some amendments. I don't even know whose they are. I think Representative Norton has a few amendments here. Let me ask you this. Is there anyone on your side that wants to offer amendments? And
There may be potentially, Mr. Chair, but we don't know yet because we didn't get this until last night. There might be members of the public that haven't seen it yet. You just posted it last night. And out of a fairness and abiding by the open process that we want to citizen input and involvement and also just giving us a opportunity to look through this, you know, there might be amendments, there might not, but at least give us that opportunity. I'm just asking for time.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I echo Representative Anderson's request. It's a 70-page omnibus bill, and yeah, we've heard all these things before, but the devil's in the details, and I just haven't had a chance. This is the first time I'm seeing it. Maybe that's my fault for not looking at the committee postings, but I also got a note from a member of the audience saying that from a previous bill, it appears that maybe a repealer needs to be added. So anyway, there's just some time to actually just look at the bill, read through it, and make sure that it's what everybody expects. I wouldn't even know how to vote right now.
Ms. Scott, do you know what time are we breaking out of, or does anyone know here, out of session today? What time is session, supposedly?
5:30.
Pardon me?
I think it's supposed to go all afternoon.
So I don't know when the committee would get back together, but we have to have a bill out, I believe, by tomorrow. Do we have to have the bill out by tomorrow? Or today?
Mr. Chair?
I think
we will be done with everything this evening at 8 o'clock, so we could certainly come back at 8 o'clock tonight. Maybe 10 o'clock if because I know we got Ways and Means that we're supposed to go over the budget bill tonight, and however long that takes.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm fine with what you decide. We also have the option of, I know you canceled tomorrow's meeting, we could do it then as well.
Let's go over the bill right now and see if there are any questions. And if there's any comments from the audience. Mr. Nelson, did you have a comment on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the legal counsel for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I commented about the bill the other day, I believe, at length, except for I didn't get an opportunity to comment on Section 84, which is on page 69 of the bill. I do want to point out a couple of things about that. As I read the bill, or this particular section, which is 10, I take it these unemployment insurance program will fund the staff portion in each workforce center. The problem with how this bill is written, that would be prohibited. Certain functions listed here would be prohibited by federal law. You cannot do accessing resource room services, searching for a job, accessing training, or is not permissible with unemployment insurance funds under federal law. Those are federal funds are very restrictive on what can be used. So those functions would either not be performed or would not be funded by AUI, and they would constitute at least half the functions. So I just want to point that problem out to the committee. I also want to point out to the committee that this bill doesn't have a sunset. And so you're looking at long-term while the Employment Insurance Program currently receives federal funding because of the extension, should that go away, you're going to put significant stresses on the program. There was a direct call. As they currently funding because of the extension, it's questionable whether it would be there to fund up 50% that would be required under this. But to put it under long term is going to put the program under incredible stress. And I simply want to point that out, that other functions will not be done. This function will be done, but then other functions within the UI program will not be done, like answering the phone, doing timely adjudication, making timely payments, new fixed stresses on the program, and people should be aware that those stresses will occur.
You know, Mr. Nelson, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Obermeyer, you would help me out here, but we heard this bill, what, 3 weeks ago? Maybe more? Was this, and I'm sure this was part of the bill. Representative Obermeyer?
Mr. Chair, it was part of the bill, and Mr. Nelson did raise that. As you might remember, we got off onto a long discussion of the five-day rule, and so as a result, this issue didn't really make it up there. I'm totally fine with working out. I think we've got some sunset language we could stick in on that, but I think the bigger issue for us is whether or not we're going to have someone doing this purpose. If we can't, if we don't have anyone that we can use federal funds to help with the job search and figuring out how the program works, that's a discussion, I guess, for policy side of things, but someone needs to help with that work because the people need to help doing it. So I think as a policy, we need to make sure we've got people to do this stuff. And I think there's some work to be done on how we put people in individual workforce centers, whether it really makes sense for someone to be sitting there all day long in a center that's not busy. But I really do believe it's essential policy. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I will point out that I have spoken with Representative Obermeyer on this particular point and have offered him some alternative language, we think, which palatable. And we are still reaching a contingent on that point, but we've been discussing since the last
You know, I've been trying to do this for 3 years, and we thought we did it last year with some of your stimulus money, but my understanding is the people that are in the workforce center under a program can only do work with a certain type of client. And so I think Representative Obermeyer was trying to address that. Are there no funds perhaps in Ms. Elsie's bag of tricks over there that we can find some money to accomplish what Representative O'Mealer is trying to accomplish here, which, if I'm not mistaken, was also addressed in that legislative auditor's report.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to speak to any of the department. I think it's improper to address what as to their funding. There is a little bit of funding.
Is Commissioner McElroy still here?
Mr. Chair, he went to the Senate. The Senate is hearing a bill.
You know, Representative Mahoney, here we can't put one person in a workforce center to do what the workforce center is supposed to do and help somebody that's laid off. And it sounds like, does Commissioner McElroy not support this?
Mr. Chair, in its current form, I will point out to the unemployment insurance program currently pays over $1 million to workforce centers to perform certain functions and provide staffing to those persons you talked about before. 25% of their time is currently paid by the UI program to perform universal functions for people regarding unemployment insurance. It's not limited simply to that federal program that we had discussed about in a meeting. So we are moving towards that, but this particular bill in its current form, again, has no sunset on it. And while certain federal funding right now may be sufficient to perform a portion of this, long term, you can put the program at great risk in its current form. And I say we're working with Representative Obermeyer to try to come up with something that is palatable. We understand the problem, we acknowledge the problem, and we're working to attempt to solve that. So we meet the needs of all our employed Minnesotans.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I do have one of the amendments I've got here actually addresses part of this issue, but I misunderstood our conversations earlier. I thought that we were dealing with the benefit review specialist piece of it when we were talking about the telephone call. And Mr. Nelson, is that the language you're talking about, that the call center person?
Mr. Chair, I forwarded a lot of different things to you lately, especially in regards to your other bill, 3274. know, but I'll forward you another copy. We can keep with that later, but we have some alternative language we think which addresses those issues, but doesn't put the long-term stresses on the program that the building.
Mr. Chairman, I do recall we did, Mr. Nelson and I did talk about this piece conceptually as well, and I mean, this language, I think, says essentially we're going to put a person in that center who can kind of do what we want done, which is help people from start to finish on this process. And I understand, you know, that's really the goal of the piece. We do need a little more flexibility, I think, with it, because we don't want someone sitting around. That's not good use of the money. Where they might be really busy on a Monday morning in a Minneapolis center, might not be so busy up in your neck of the woods on a Thursday afternoon. And so, trying to figure out that flexibility piece, I'm happy to keep working with, and I think plenty of time to do it. I don't think this language is identical in the Senate, and so if we made it all the way through to the end, certainly have a chance to talk with it all along the process in finance on the floor and in a conference committee down the line. So, you know, but the concept is still there. I think this law, this would still work in its current form, but I'm happy to keep talking about that possible changes to it down the line.
Representative Obermiller, is one of these amendments yours for this particular issue?
I was mistaken, Mr. Chair. One of the amendments I have deals with the benefit review specialist that we had talked about, which was these two things dovetailed in my mind together. They're separate in the bill, but they're essentially issues, two sides of the coin. And so, which I think really would save the benefit review specialist piece of it, which for people who don't live and breathe this stuff, that was the piece where we were trying to give a chance to get, if your first determination was wrong and it was just something so obvious that it should be changed, that person would be able to kind of step in and do the revisions on it before you had to go to a formal appeal process. And that's what the amendment I have deals with, but not this piece. But I do recall talking about this language, and so we can resurrect that and take a look at it.
You'll continue to work for it. Commissioner just took on a new program. He obviously has money for that, so we can find some money to do what your function is, and we'll work on that together. Are you offering? Representative Obermiller, why don't we take your amendment or amendments and at least get this bill put together in its final form? Representative Norton, you got a few in here too, and then we'll decide what we're going to do with the bill and move forward. Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got the A4, but I thought there was an A2. Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
Okay, Representative Obermiller moves the A2 amendment telephone number.
This is Mr. Chair is not going to like this as much as what we had in there before, but it's really a workability issue for us. The benefit review specialist that we had talked about was we intended to kind of have 10 people stand there and be ready to take kind of the pre-appeal calls that come when a decision is erroneously made to try to avoid some of the appeals that really clog up the system. Because of the way the centralized call center works over there, that it's just impractical to say we're going to have 10, because sometimes you might need 20 and sometimes you might need 2. I had the pleasure of actually going over and seeing the system from the behind the scenes, and so I think this actually will work a lot better. But basically what this does is that when you get your determination, it's going to have a phone number on there that says, if you've got a question about this, you think it's, you know, you've missed something, something's obvious that would be an easy fix that would keep you out of the appeal system, you can call this number and talk to someone who would be designated and specialized to deal with those types of issues to make that initial, kind of the second set of eyes on an initial determination. Not as good, I think, as talking in person with someone, but, you know, one-on-one with someone, but a dedicated line to get in and not have to stand in line behind everybody else who's got just questions about the system will be helpful. So I think this is a good amendment. I'd like your support.
Questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Are you going to offer the A4 amendment then?
I am, Mr. Chair, if you wouldn't mind.
I like your honor, but
don't go down that road.
It's bad enough to vote for anything.
The A4 amendment, Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment is a revision of the 5-day rule discussion we had a few weeks back. What I've done with this amendment is I had several conversations, and I want to thank the folks from the staffing agency and the good hard work their lobbyist has done on this piece to try to help carve out some of the things that they are very important with. I wish I could tell you that we'd come to a great kumbaya moment on this. I don't think we have. And frankly, because of the timing of things, they haven't had as much time to kind of bounce it off their membership as they'd like. But what this basically does is it would leave the five-day rule in place for most people. And as the five-day rule was, again, that requirement that if you don't call back in after your job ends within 5 days and ask for the next job, then you're deemed to have quit. It leaves it in place for most people, or for a lot of people. But it does carve out one exception. That is, if you are a person who are not, you know, regular, a full-timer kind of person with the staffing service, if your wage credits are less than 75% with a staffing service, then we determine that your work is not, that staff work, temporary work, is not suitable for you, and so the five-day rule wouldn't apply to you. And I think it's a compromise that works. It does keep, you know, the biggest concern I heard, and it's a valid one, is that the business model is we need people to come to the table who are working here and ask for more work. And we want to keep that piece in place. And so the law actually explicitly now would say that seeking employment is seeking suitable employment from a staffing service. And so the business side of things, you keep your product, which is these people who work, churning through the system, we still have that. But we don't catch people in the trap of people who are trying out because of the current economy 6 months in this system and then want to go back and look for work in their own field. We don't kind of trap them into the loss of unemployment while they're out searching for the next job that is not in the temporary agency. So I think it's a good compromise. They're not set with it yet, but I'd like to offer that amendment, please.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. Is there anybody from the staffing agency group or temp agency to test tomorrow?
Well, come on. Come on up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Randy Morris. I'm the outside lobbyist for the Minnesota Recruiting and Staffing Association. Representative Overbuehler very accurately describes the kind of conversations we've been having for the last 3 weeks on this issue, and we appreciate very much the opportunity we had in front of the committee a couple weeks ago to talk about 5 day. This is not brand new, but different. And we are not there yet. I want Cindy Brooks from Dolphin Staffing. Remember, Kathy Dolphin was up and had some conversation. Cindy is the UI specialist for Dolphin, and I think wants to focus specifically on page 2, lines 2.29 and 2.30 of the A4 amendment. We have some concerns about the 75 number and some other issues. So if I could turn it over to Cindy, I'd appreciate it.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify your name for the tape.
Pardon me?
Just identify yourself on the tape.
My name is Cindy Brooks. I'm from Dolphin Staffing, and I'm a part of the Minnesota Recruiting and Staffing Association.
Welcome, Ms. Brooks.
Thank you. We did have some conversation beforehand with Representative Overbuehler, and not there yet. I was able only to contact one of the other members from our association for such a short period of time, which is my boss. I know if I call her enough, she'll pick up her phone. So I was able to talk with her. She gave a little bit of feedback that I would like to be able to talk more in detail with the rest of our members and with Representative Overmuller, hopefully today. Some of the feedback that I got from Ms. Dolphin was that we possibly would be okay with this. Maybe not the percentage, maybe we could talk more about that. And maybe possibly talk about us not, the staffing industry not holding the responsibility of the benefits that would be charged. So kind of put that out there to you as something more that we would like to discuss.
Okay. Mr. Morris.
And Mr. Chair and members, there's one more issue that I just want to raise for you. It's in section 6 on the last page of the amendment, where there appears to be a conflict with the 5-day rule. And in talking with Lee Nelson at the department, there may need to be language that indicates that the language on 4.31 and 4.32 apply unless the five-day rule applies. So we need to fix something that may be contradictory to the language as it currently stands. So there's a couple things here we need to fix and talk about with Representative Obermueller. We just wanted to be in front of you to say we need a little bit more time on this one. Thank you.
Well, I would prefer that we incorporate this in, and I will be supporting your amendment, and then you can work with those folks.
Mr. Chair, I would just say, the way we're reading it right now, our folks don't support the amendment, and we understand you want to put it on. So we're kind of at cross purposes as we try to move the bill forward. Just to let you know and let all the members know, we would be continuing with Representative Obermueller.
Well, it's a give and take process,
yes, sure,
Mr. Morris. You know that. So,
Mr. Chair, if I could,
thank you, Ms. Brooks, for your input on it. Representative Obermueller.
I do have. We could do an oral amendment to my, or I could incorporate an oral amendment into my A4 amendment that addresses that latter issue, and that would be on line 4.32. And I can give this to Ms. Newman. I've got it in writing already. But before the period, we would insert unless section 268.095. Subdivision 2D applies, and I'll pass that over to Ms. Newman when we're done here, if it goes on, but incorporates, because what that does is essentially, I don't think it's necessary, but it's comfort language, and I'm happy to have it in there. It basically says that the current law, which is that you're discharged if you end your temporary job assignment, that's current law under case law. It's just not in statute, so we're adding that in. And then we've made this exception to it, which is the five-day rule, and it's saying, so unless the exception applies, a discharge is a discharge.
Okay, we'll just incorporate that in your amendment, and Ms. Newman will take care of that. Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Obermueller's oral amendment may go a little bit towards increasing my comfort, but having worked for a company that actually had a temporary accounting and financial employment business, and hearing from numerous staffing companies who literally felt the original bill as written by Representative Obermueller might threaten their very ability to operate and function effectively. Boy, at a time where we're trying to find these little dynamic places for people to regain employment and find temporary jobs and work around their kids' schedules and deal with somebody getting laid off on a temporary basis and come back, I just don't know why we do something to put that very important function in our economy and in our employment world at risk. I'm not comfortable adding this without the staffing firms themselves saying that this doesn't fundamentally compromise the way they do business, and I don't think I'm hearing that, so I'm going to urge opposition to this, and if it could be worked out between now and when we hear this on the floor and Representative Obermueller could offer it there, I'd be willing to support it with the support of the staffing firms. But the feedback I was getting from people in that business is that the language fundamentally altered their ability to be successful in doing business in this very important space in our economy. So I'd urge some caution here and urge a no vote on the amendment.
Okay. We have the discussion. Representative Obermueller moves the A4 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Norton moves.
The A3, Mr. Chair?
The A3 amendment. Block grants, Department of Employment and Economic Development. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, this is in response to the auditor's report that we heard in this committee and then Representative Mahoney's committee. I unfortunately didn't see the email until after the deadlines, and so I'm asking to amend this on. It doesn't actually apply block grants, but it does ask the department in the interim to let us know what a block grant proposal might look like. And we worked with the Department of Economic Development on this language, and Ms. Newman did a fabulous job of pulling it together for me last evening. So hopefully I'll have the support of the committee to move this ahead statute this year.
Ms. Batsley, or anyone from DEED, is there any comment, Mr. Loftus, on this? For, against, neutral?
Mr. Chairman, we have Representative Morgan, excuse me, and we do support the language. It's in the same theme of discussion and work that we've done in the past with the program accountability measures. This takes it another step further as we develop better measures of performance. And as we look at the proposal, or at the amendment, it does create a scenario in which we will make recommendations with how it would look if we did block grants of the funds that we currently have that are in the various past categories. That's not to say that we will automatically do that. It's a way for you to look at the process of how that could occur, how we might set goals, how we might determine objectives for different categories of funding that we have. And then next session, and the interim to next session, you can look at that proposal, those ideas, and say if that seems to work, if you want us to work on that some more, that would be the way we would perceive the.
You don't see any cost of this. You can do this in-house, no extra duties. Okay, questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Representative Norton offers, is that the A5 amendment?
And Mr. Chair, this might be a little more controversial, but when we had the discussion on the Governor's Workforce Development Council, I raised concerns at that time about being able to feel very comfortable that it's nonpartisan in nature and that we were, even though it is the Governor's Council, that we're getting recommendations directly to us that represented the views of the committee members. And so what I'm asking is, Representative Mahoney had an amendment on Representative Brenner's bill. It's included now in the bigger bill that we have before us. And what it does is define, because in law currently it doesn't define, number one, who actually it's on point line 1.6 of the amendment, who the director of the council, who the chair is of the council. It's not stated, so I'm suggesting that the director be the chair of the council, which then would, in the other part of the bill, mean the chair, the director is also the chair of the executive committee. And it does not remove any of the current council members, but does qualify that the commissioner of deed, the commissioner of public health, that the commissioners that are serving on that council are non-voting ex officio members. I think their input is extremely important, but I wanted this to be more of a consumer-led council, and commissioners carry a lot of weight and power, and so I was afraid that their weight and power might influence too heavily the workforce's actions. And so I'm just asking that they still are on the council, but they're non-voting ex officio members. So those are the two changes that I'm proposing.
So who is left as a voting member?
Everybody else. There's a 31-member council, so everyone else would be voting members. It would just be those four that would be non-voting ex officio.
Okay. I'm looking at this
Section A.
All right. Representative Anderson and then Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Norton, the commissioners are the only ones that get approved by the Senate through confirmation hearings. So now we are taking a council that will have no accountability to the voters of the state, to the citizens of the state, and we're putting it in the hands of folks, no elective part of it at all. And I think we are going in the wrong direction. The whole point of having commissioners is that they're supposed to be watching over these different areas. I don't even like this section that Mahoney put in the first place. I think that whole executive committee shouldn't even be in here in the first place, and we've had that conversation before. So I would urge members to oppose this just on the grounds alone that now we're taking away the, what is it, five individuals that actually have some tie to the citizens of this state, and saying, no, we don't even want to have them as voting members. I think this is the wrong approach to take.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate those comments. And again, I'm trying to make this more nonpartisan. You will note that the workforce program outcomes still go to the commissioner, and the commissioner still has plenty of influence and will be at all the meetings. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the other changes that Representative Mahoney put in here, though I'm not able to put my finger on it, Oh, I think it's on line 1.17. Maybe Mr. Representative Mahoney can find it. But the committee still does report to both the governor and the legislature, and the commissioners are on the council. So I don't think this is doing what Representative Anderson suggests it will do. I just think it's making it less partisan, and the information we get will be more representative of the industry.
Representative Briner, I skipped over you before, and did you have a question on a previous amendment, or?
No, Mr. Lockton, actually.
I'm sorry. My eyes are
getting... Don't let up on the guilt.
My eyes are getting bad. I am sorry, and I apologize. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got two things I'll address here. Representative Anderson, the money that pays for this workforce training it comes from primarily the first 27,000, I think it is, or 27,500 of income on all employees of businesses in the state of Minnesota. What I think Representative Norton's amendment does is essentially say gives more power to the people who are paying for it versus I think there's been a phrase in the newspapers and the news lately of big government taking over big jobs. We're just trying as Democrats to give power back to the people who actually want it. So I'll leave it at that. I do want on the record in committee that I the only difference to Representative Norton's amendment is I would have made it clearer that the director of the Workforce Council is the chair of that council and hence the chair of the executive committee. But I think this language is close enough, and if they choose to ignore us, we can always come back next year and force the issue.
Ms. Batsley, would you come up, please? I imagine that you're in full support of this.
I'm clear, Mr. Chair. Bonnie Elsie, I know, is on her way here. And my concern, and I need to do some more research on it, but this council is mandated in federal law, and it prescribes who needs to be on the council. And I don't know if anything says if they're voting members or that. I am not clear on that. And so I'd just like to bring it to your attention that I need to look into this.
So is the funding for this out of our workforce, special little workforce tax, or out of the federal?
The federal. It's the 10% flexible WIA money, Workforce Investment Act money.
So you're concerned then that there may be a federal requirement that even though these commissioners are specified in federal law to be on there, that they have to be voting members? And you don't know
it's
the answer
possible
to that?
And I don't know the answer, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton, given that information, what's your preference?
Well, Mr.
Put
Chair,
it on and
I would like to put it on, and if it is against federal compliance, I certainly would remove it.
Okay. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want you to thank you, Representative Rokadina, now Governor Rokadina. All of a sudden, they take all of your commissioners out of this thing and make them non-voting members. And the tendency will be, and I've seen it over and over, as I'm sure you have, if they are not voting members, commissioners usually send somebody else to take their place in those meetings. And there are people that are accountable to the people. There are four representatives, two representatives and two senators, and they certainly are.
And they're ex officio representatives.
No, I think they're voting members.
No, I don't think they can be because they're...
Aren't they? No. I think they're... They always listen to me. That was on quite.
Well...
They came if they didn't get a vote.
If there's a new governor and you're the deed commissioner, I'm sure you'll be very persuasive even if you don't have a vote. Ms. Elsie, would you care to comment? The amendment is taking off the four commissioners. Excuse me, I'm not taking them off, taking them from the three commissioners from being voting members of the workforce.
Okay.
counsel. Welcome, sir.
Yeah. Representative Rugavina and members of the council. I literally would have to go back to the federal regulations to see if this is allowable. I haven't read that section yet. I mean, for a while, I've obviously read it many times, but I don't want to sit here and say, yes, you can or no, you can't. I would have to go back and look it up.
So you're not sure either?
I'm not sure.
All righty. Well, Representative Gornis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only comment, I have served on this council, and I guess my question is, I'm not sure what we're trying to accomplish. I may be missing something.
Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I've had this committee actually present, as you have in K-12, some findings. And my concern is that it is that everything that happens on the committee is filtered through a partisan filter, and that we don't see all the suggestions perhaps that come out of the committee, all the ideas. We see the ones that are approved by the commissioners and the governor. And I just would like us to have a more open process that all ideas are brought forward and there's a little more transparency. I'm not trying to be rude or mean. I, as a legislator, I would like to know the recommendations are those of the entire committee and not filtered through the governor's office, no matter what the governor, Republican or Democrat.
Mr. Chair, I would only say that in my experience on the council, I don't think I ever saw any glaring political. I mean, it was a very fair, well-balanced council as far as I could tell. And in the end, everyone had agreement or it didn't move forward. That was the unique thing about the council. No legislation ever moved without the 100% approval of all participants.
Representative Rukavina and members of the council, I would have to say that there is always a minority report, even if the voting is not, if the majority goes forward, they also give a minority report. The council is an independent body, and just because commissioners sit on the council doesn't mean the voice of the council doesn't go forward.
Okay. We've heard the Representative Norton, I really prefer that you would kind of hold this right now, and we'll see what the answer is, and then we can add it on in finance, maybe.
Mr. Chair, would you be willing to divide the
boundary lines.
The line, the vote between 1.3 and 1.4 to 1.6, and then we could just vote on the second section, and I would hold the first section until we have better information.
Okay. Well, Representative Norton then offers that the director of the council shall, as that's the part that you do want to offer right now?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-oh, now Deed's coming back up. They can support a whole new organization, but they can't handle a few little changes. Go ahead, Ms. Elsie.
Yes, Representative Rukavina, members of the council. I know it is indirect in federal statute that the chair of the council must be a private sector business person.
Representative Martin.
And would the director that is hired not be a business person?
That's correct. The director that is hired, like Brian Lindsay, is actually a Deed staff.
And I guess my question is, when you hire a person to run something in the workforce development, do they not have a business background? Or you want someone that's working in the private sector that's a business person?
No. The chair of the council, there's a difference between the chair and the director. Mm-hmm. The chair of the council must be a private sector business person. The director of the council, like Brian, we hired because he has a master's degree in public policy, and so we hire for a different kind of role.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then I'm going to withdraw this because, frankly, it does not state that in law. It may be in the federal law, but it doesn't state it in here. It was very unclear to me who the director was, so perhaps I will come forward with an amendment at a later time that clarifies the point you're making, and when we have clarification on the non-voting ex officio,
Okay.
If it can be done, I will bring it forward again at another time. Thank you.
All right. Then we just have a AN-209 amendment.
This is
and I'm going to move it, and it's a technical correction. We lost some repealers from the Murdoch bill that we heard. And the Oberman? And the Dolly fee bill, too. So this is just repealers.
as a technical amendment, and we need an oral amendment to it to direct staff to fix. Well, first we'll move the AN 209 amendment, which are just, were in other bills and left out by accident. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion for bills. Now, members, I guess I should direct staff, as, and I don't know if I need to do this as an amendment, to fix the effective dates and anything that need to be fixed or other technical corrections. And I will do that as a motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion for bills. Members, we'll let this bill sit until tomorrow. We will have a meeting then, so I don't want Representative Anderson to be mad at me. She's been so nice to me as of late. And we will just let them, this omnibus bill sit here, and we will have any amendments or that or concerns by the audience, the public, members, etc. Tomorrow we will meet at 10:30 in room 10:30 in room 10. Is that fine with you? And now we're going to take the Representative McFarland's higher ed bill is being used as a vehicle, and I will walk through that. So we have House File. Now I will move that House File 3495. Representative McFarland's delete everything amendment. The DE3 amendment be moved as the omnibus bill, and I will walk through what's in here again. Everything that we've discussed in this committee. Representative Welty's bill, including mental health for data privacy, is in the bill. Representative Poppy's senior citizen increase is in the bill. Representative McFarland's bill then increases with licensing, I believe being able to charge the privates and a number of other fees for the Office of Higher Education that they had requested. And that runs through page 8, Representative Poppy's language on the central system, which I believe we did put also in the omnibus bill, is in here on page 8 from her bill. Then we continue with Representative McFarland's House File 3495 through page 13, which is all OE requests. And Representative Poppy's language again on the Streamline Minsky System Office.
We need to do that. And that's Poppy's too.
And Representative Poppy's credit transfer language continues for section 23 and section 24. Representative Newton's language regarding the issue we heard with the lady that did not get her or lost her health insurance is in here. And we have a repealer that Representative Nornes had in House File 3354, which actually, what does that do, Kathy, that repealer?
Mr. Chair, it eliminates an obsolete placed in this bill.
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, in light of the newspaper reports that the Senate decided to be an elitist organization and only serve alcohol in private boxes at the TCF Stadium and the bar and Mariucci, that is not in this particular bill at all. Anything that matches up with any kind of language that allows alcohol to be sold to elites rather than the common people.
Nobody's come, I mean, I've had a lobbyist come to me the other day about that issue, and I just
hopefully you threw him out of your office on the air.
He's in the hallway, and it's his hallway too, but
well.
I'm disturbed about the insinuation that the legislature caused any damage on that issue to the university, because I believe it's the Board of Regents that made that decision, not us.
As reported in the newspaper, it was, and I think it was a unanimous vote by the Board of Regents to ban alcohol. Not our problem.
So I don't know, does anybody want to discuss? Representative Morris.
I have a question.
Representative Briner first, and then Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm sitting right next to Representative Pappy, who's my friend and colleague, but I have some questions about some elements of the Minsky system proposal, particularly Section 23, page 13. Mm-hmm. And I do realize we heard this bill in committee, but we did not really have the opportunity to fully vet it. We simply heard it. There was some comment on some sections of it. And my understanding when we left the hearing of that bill is that we would hear Minsky's report before we would make some final decisions on this. And here the recommendations are very specific about eliminating and transferring certain programs. The earlier language on the overall mission of the central office, I understand, but I'm not comfortable moving this type of specific reorganization without further vetting of the Minsky report that we asked them to do and more, just more public debate on the proposal.
Representative Briner, you know, I have to admit that this was, you know, my choice. I had talked to Representative Pappy about a number of things she might want in this bill. I have a tendency to agree with your concern. You know, we've been so rushed around here with getting omnibus bills out, and our finance bill for a deadline that got moved way up, and then I was told that I was supposed to have these bills out by. So what I would do is, Representative Pappy might get mad at me, but and maybe you should do it instead, so she gets mad at you. And I would suggest that perhaps somebody on line 13.8, after the period, just delete everything in section 23. Oh, somebody's got a piece of paper. It's written out on there. So Representative Briner moves the handwritten amendment that is page 13, line 8, delete everything after the period. Page 13, delete lines 9 through 16, I guess. Yeah. So Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment. Any of my comments ought not to be interpreted that I might not be open to any of these changes or transfers of authority, but I would just like to have a full vetting and hearing before we make the decision, so I do appreciate this amendment.
I agree with you, and it was my, you know, mistake. And Representative Pappy, I'm sure you care to comment, but I think, Representative Pappy, that you've made certain things perfectly clear to the central office. So what would you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I recognize that people may be uncomfortable with some of this language, as it was mentioned in the hearing. It may be prescriptive regarding what they should do. Many of these comments were from the OLA report, and certainly it I've begun to read through the Minsky report regarding their what they're going to do, and I'm quite concerned about, again, the campuses saying that they're going to have difficulty in the future, and we really must make decisions regarding how we're going to eliminate services at one level or the other. So it's either at the central office system or at the local campus system, and these were some of the recommendations. So I really think that if we aren't going to be serious about this, that's going to be an issue. But you know, I recognize, I think we'll have a vote on this amendment, and I suspect that I may not be on the prevailing side. So I appreciate the opportunity to have the bill heard, and I appreciate what you've put into this bill. Thank you.
Representative Mornes, to the point?
Not to this point, no.
Representative McFarland, did you have a question to this?
Not just to this, but procedurally. We just received this bill this morning. Is there any possibility to lay this over for tomorrow to finish it?
Well, that
or not? I'm just curious.
I'll tell you, you must be reading your neighbor's mind over there. We are going to lay it over until tomorrow morning. We're going to have a full hearing as we move these bills out at 10:30 tomorrow.
Thank you, sir.
We've got the motion. Representative Mahoney?
Well, Mr.
On this?
Yes, to this particular amendment. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we cannot continue to put off changes at Minsky. We really, we are going to be such pain next year that if we do not start directing them to address some of the concerns, particularly when we have a very highly qualified, nonpartisan, well-respected report like the Legislative Auditor's Report, come forth and make recommendations. And I don't think it got much of a hearing in this particular committee for whatever reason, but they were not Dragonian recommendations. Representative Poppe has brought forth a responsible, a minimum kind of paragraph here. I think we could have gone much farther. And so I would not support this particular amendment to delete that language. I think if we do not start acting now, we are just pushing more money in tuition costs onto students. And that's the problem that we've done. It's now cheaper in many states to go, many instances, to go to school out of state than to go to school in this state. To go to Arizona on out-of-state tuition is less than to go to pay tuition in the state of Minnesota. It's foolish. So I'm going to oppose this particular amendment. But then I'm going to also comment on the fact that I got a 70-page report, or you know, almost 70-page report from Minsky, and I get an 8-page report, much more concise, much more insightful, from the U of M. I don't know what's going on here, but I feel like I'm at times buried under paper.
You're not the only one, Representative Mahoney, that feels that way.
Well, I think the whole committee feels that way, but I'm trying to speak to the audience.
Well, you know, we've got a problem here because in the omnibus higher ed finance bill on the Senate side, we had put a cap, a number, on the central office for the first time last year in our bill, which was opposed by, you know, the Board of Trustees. And the Senate didn't like it, and they finally accepted it, and this year in their bill they removed it again. There was absolutely no language at all in the Senate bill referring to any type of changes central office at all. There's been a philosophical difference between the Senate and the House. I think we've tried to be more responsible to the taxpayers' dollars, quite frankly, and that there should be oversight over both the university and Minsky when you give the taxpayers' money away. We've tried to do that more. You know, if you remember, I think it was last year where I brought out that book from when I first got here. That was the budget report that we got from the Office of Higher Education and the two different systems, and it was this thick. And we went line by line, whether it was an ag special at the U or some sort of appropriation. You know, then there was no central office because the technical colleges were run by local school districts. Maybe we should go back. You know, they still do that over in Wisconsin, and in Wisconsin they actually have technical colleges yet. There are technical colleges. So, you know, there's been a lot of reform around this place in the last couple of decades, and sometimes the reform doesn't work that well. But I think at least this committee's been a lot more focused on looking at efficiencies in the system than our neighbors across the street. And I'm going to go into that battle now. I'm not on the conference committee, but I mean, they've lifted the dollar cap on the central office in their bill over there, so it gets us back to where we were before. Representative Briner?
Just a final comment, Mr. Chair. I certainly understand the urgency of the need to reduce expenses at Minsky at the central office in favor of redirecting resources to campuses, given the current budget. I do represent the Mankato area, and Minnesota State Mankato has been through some very severe budget cuts, so I understand that urgency. Nevertheless, respecting the process, changes that are this specific, even though they might come from the legislative auditor, I think require a full public vetting, and I just don't feel that we've had that.
And I might add, and Representative Downey, you're next, but I might add also, in meeting with Senator Pappas yesterday, members, that, you know, their cuts are just there There's no mention, like we did, that the central office did a reduction in the Senate bill. There's no mention that we look at the administrative growth in the university and Minsky systems and cut there before we cut programs and teachers. And we did that, and there's nothing in that bill. And what do I have to, you know, I'm not on the conference committee for obvious reasons, because I didn't vote for the bill. And so, you know, I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But I think we did a good job of sending a message to the central office and that we did think about some of the cuts and how they're going to filter down to the students, and we tried to address that. Representative Mahoney. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess there'd be a possible alternative to the Brainerd Amendment, and that might be to leave lines 14 through 16 in and just remove the very prescriptive language about which functions belong where. I'll let Representative Brainerd think about that. But to the broader point, I mean, I think all of the evidence indicates that Minsky has done a far better job than the University of Minnesota in controlling its tuition. It's the only entity, look through the 18 bargaining units that we just approved in state government finance, and the only two where there was a meaningful reduction were within Minsky. Their tuition has gone up far less than the university's the last couple of years. I think the Minsky board, frankly, is doing a pretty darn good job under tight circumstances, and I have not heard them asking for any favors. They would potentially, if you really wanted to kind of set a set of targets for them, we'll cut their appropriation, which we know is coming, and ask them to cap tuition and then let them figure out how to do it operationally within their organization. And just from an outside business perspective, looking at Minsky, they have, and you can argue about whether it's perfect yet, but they have intentionally designed a shared service organization model, which is entirely appropriate for a very large distributed group like that. And if the legislative auditor pointed out a couple of functional areas where maybe they don't have it right, they expressed recognition of that fact and a willingness to go after and address those areas, I say just let them do their work and don't prescribe to them and think that we here in the legislature in 2010 somehow have the magic solution that's going to support their dynamic, ever-changing organization from here to eternity. These recommendations, maybe they're good this year, maybe they're not, but let's give their board and their executive team the freedom and flexibility, and let's set the outcomes that we want as compared to prescribing the solution. So I vote very much in favor of the Brainerd Amendment and retain the autonomy of that board and let them find ways to fix the problems that they readily admit could see improvement.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a change to my written amendment, and instead of page 13, delete lines 9 to 16, delete lines 9 to 13. And thank you for that recommendation.
And the language after the period on the page, or in line 8. Through there, okay.
Yes, right, that's right.
We understand the motion. All those in favor? So then we have the motion in front of us. Representative Poppy, do you want the last word, or have we discussed it enough?
Fine.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
That motion prevails. Representative Poppy, do you have any amendments that you want to offer?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have an A2.
Representative Poppy.
I don't think so.
Who's the A2 amendment? Members will be getting it. Minnesota State College University System Office Reorganization.
This amendment is actually, thank you, Mr. Chair, this amendment is actually complementary to the language that's currently in this omnibus bill, and it really is regarding, again, just a further statement regarding the reorganization within the central system office, and making it clear that as we're looking at academic and student affairs, that where the students are located is where the critical point is for academic and student affairs to be able to be supported, to be provided,
and that's what this amendment does.
Ms. King, you want to comment on this? Or Ms. Baer, who wants to comment on it?
Chair Covina, I'm happy to be here on behalf of the Minnesota State Schools and Universities. I'm Dr. Linda Baer, the Senior Vice Chancellor for the Academic and Student Affairs.
Good morning, members. My name is Laura King. I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer.
Ms. Baer, go ahead.
Chair Covina, this was the first time we've seen this language in particular, the Section 23 that's now been amended, and certainly this amendment. The items were not specifically in the OLA report, which indicated that the Office of the Chancellor was, in fact, doing a good job given the complex nature of the system and the campuses. There were many items listed that we are working on improving, and we appreciate the fact that you've acknowledged that the board has committed to making changes. Again, the facts and the data show that our Academic and Student Affairs Unit is doing comparable work that other states have in their system offices. We do not duplicate the facts and the activities within campus work. We, in fact, coordinate, advocate, do compliance work, do reporting work. And so I would be pleased to be able to offer in more detail what the unit actually does, if you would like more of the facts about what we're about.
Ms. Baer, I will point out that we did hear the Poppy bill, and I believe this and everything else in the bill was in the bill, and the bill was 2 weeks ago, got a number, House file, and we heard it last week.
At least a week and a half ago.
So,
Chair Recovina, I'm responding to the fact of deleting units and mandating structural changes that we didn't have delete the diversity office or
Yeah, it was in there. It was in there.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, I also don't have a delete the diversity officer. I'm just talking about transferring the responsibility to the institutions.
Well, Ms. Baer, on that point, we actually do very serious federal compliance work. We do civil rights. We do affirmative action for the campuses and work with them in EEOC. We report. We do investigations through that diversity office. So those are some of the things that we actually do. And because we have smaller campuses, much of the work does need to be organized and performed from the diversity office and our system office.
Ms. King.
It's deleted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. The thing with the amendment before you, the concern we have with the A2 amendment, is that it presumes that there are activities in the central office that are duplicates of activities at the campuses. And that's just simply not the case. And so when it asks us to reorganize so that services provided are provided at each institution instead, we are doing at the central office the academic and student affairs work that's happening at the campuses, and the campuses aren't doing the academic and student affairs work that happened in the central office. So it's not at all clear to us what the office contemplates these words accomplishing, because we just aren't aware that there's the kind of duplication that this language suggests. At the central level, we do system-wide work. We don't do work that is also being done at each campus. So this amendment for us, Mr. Chair, I think we'd be hard-pressed to understand how to implement it.
Representative Poppy and then Donnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think even by the testimony today, then this seems like it would be an amendment that could be a friendly amendment, because if already there's not duplication, it just clearly states that, and it helps to clarify that for campuses as well as the central office system.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Poppy, I think I appreciate the intent, but as I look at this, I read a lot more into what we're saying It seems to me to be saying that all of the academic and student affairs must be provided at the institution or campus level and must not be duplicated at the central system level. And maybe I don't fully understand the intent or the wording, but I'm just thinking about, just in my own mind, I don't know this world, but academic affairs and student services, there's kind of the front end of dealing with the people, and then there's the back end, the IT systems, the professional support staff, there's the facility costs, there's probably legal support, there's HR support, professional development and training and best practices. And so now we're saying that anything that that Minsky might have very intelligently centralized and kind of optimized and made even better, that all of that would have to be distributed, and we'd be replicating all of those functions and people and costs at every location, and probably sub-optimizing the function and the delivery because it's all distributed, and some of these campuses are pretty small and wouldn't be able to fund these things as largely as they want. So I look at this as pushing them probably in a direction that could conceivably make this suboptimal and not improve it. And maybe I'd just ask that for a comment back from the Minsky folks if I'm over-interpreting or if I'm accurately interpreting what might possibly happen as a result of this language.
Ms. Baer.
Chair Recovina and Representative.
Excuse me, Ms. Baer. Being a ranger, what's the definition of sub-optimizing?
Mr. Chair, when you look at large, complex organizations like this,
is that a Downey word, or is it?
No, you make it worse.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. I understood to make it worse better. Okay, Ms. Baer.
Chair Recovina. That's the statement that supports what we're about. In our offices, we do things that are at a system level in relation to development of policy and procedures that help pull the system together to make transfer work better, to make the opportunities for students better. We work on much of the research and planning reporting that is required from the state. We work closely with Office of Higher Ed in that way. We maintain the centralized database, and these are not duplicative efforts with campuses. We do many mandated reports, some of them for the legislature, some of them for agency sharing. We do financial aid coordination, we do system technology licensing, we coordinate compliance with policies. In fact, we've had far improved audits that you've heard from the financial aid perspectives because of the good work that we've been able to do in assisting campuses to improve their practices. We do veterans reintegration programs. We're coordinating and assisting campuses. Remember, our campuses are very small to very large. Many of the very small campuses just don't have the offices to do the work. If we were redoing diversity or some of these other functions, every campus may need to then hire someone in addition to do some of those things.
So what is the size of the, how many employees and what's the budget for just for the academic and student affairs?
The size for academic affairs, as you have in your spreadsheets, include 92 total, but it is 57 from base funding. 35 of them are from federal projects. We are having work that people in Minnesota are doing because we've been able to bring federal money into the operation. So the true number is 57 from base funding, and then 35 from the federal projects.
And the dollar amount for, I don't have.
I can get the bottom dollar for you. My spreadsheet on this is about personnel.
Okay, Representative Poppy and then Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're going to be making tough choices in this session and into the future, and I really am just intent on protecting students' tuition dollars and taxpayer dollars and making it clear that we're going to have to make decisions that either we provide support for a full-service central office system or we provide support for the campuses, and that may not be contradictory. That may be that there are going to be things that the central office must provide, but we're going to have to start streamlining and focusing and figuring out what it is that's critical for the central office to provide and what is mandatory and expected in a local campus and college level. So, again, I'm respectfully submitting this and wanting everyone to just, you know, help prepare for the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Blaine.
Following that sort of way of thinking, and maybe in also with Representative Downey's concern about sub-optimization, when we were out with our committee visiting with campuses, Chair Rukavina, we heard from some faculty that sometimes decisions made at the central office with programming and scheduling of classrooms and things like that was really cumbersome for the institution and made it difficult for them to really do things in a way that worked well. And I guess I'm wondering, are those kinds of decisions looked at, and could there be some decisions that were passed on to the local colleges that would actually be better and actually optimize the way the system works?
Ms. King?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Bly, all decisions about classroom scheduling and course scheduling and what programs to put on the calendar are campus decisions. We maintain a software program that the campuses use that enables them to schedule
their buildings. But we lose the federal.
But we have no opinion about how they balance their classroom demands. One of the things that we've worked very hard at is to bring technology online to help the campuses, which they use. We do bulk purchasing, we do joint RFPs, we combine buying power so that we can get licenses and access to programs that the campuses want, and then they go forth and use them in their interest. So we don't, there must have been some kind of a mix-up in the message. We don't have anything to do, we have standards for how classrooms are built, but we don't say that, you know, Riverland put this class in that room on Tuesday. That's completely campus driven.
That was not the impression I had by the faculty. They were talking about, and maybe it's because of the computer-generated scheduling that happened, or scheduling of rooms. But there were some rooms that they felt they weren't able to use because of the central office procedure for certain classrooms. Do you recall that?
Representative Bly, I do recall that, and I'm trying to think, was it at Metro State?
Yeah, Metro State.
If I can, I'll try to pursue it, because there's something mixed up about that. We have standards that we've used in planning capital projects, for instance, that helps campuses figure out how many stations do they want in a chemistry lab and how many seats do they want in a general lecture hall. That's at the capital project planning stages. But we don't have any opinion about how they manage their facilities and their calendar. So there's something mixed up there.
Okay. Well, we've got the amendment before us.
Mr. Chair, if I might just...
Go ahead, Ms. King.
...wanted to comment, just so that members understand that we and our presidents and our board completely get the anxiety that we all feel about financial planning over the next couple of years. And we're at work at that right now. And we've given presidents lots of guidance about how to think about the outlook, and none of us particularly positive. The Chancellor's Office has committed to making reductions in our budget that are at least equal to the reductions in state appropriation that the campuses are expecting. And I would say, furthermore, that the Chancellor's Office has reduced its budget more than the campuses have over the last several years. So I would hope members believe us when we recognize the concern we have and know that we share that concern, and we're managing to try to do the best we can to keep doors open and classes available in the years ahead.
Well, sometimes, you know, Representative Downey, I am having visited most of the campuses in this state, and I'm a little surprised that I think of the number of administrative people that show up at meetings. And you know, I think we've tried to do a pretty good job of knowing that the cuts that are coming, and when we lose the federal money, what might happen the next biennium, that we try to focus our resources on the classroom, the instruction,
the students. And I think we've tried to do a pretty good job of that. You know, I don't want to pick on the central office any more than we have. So I guess I kind of just, the board or the members can do what they want. I'm not going to support the amendment at this time. But, you know, we have to focus on the students and what's happening to them. And I, no matter where I've gone in this state, what's happening as far as the debt load, you know, the governor's proposing that we increase the loan program, which is good. Our loan program is cheaper than getting money from the bank and that, but it's still increasing students' debt. The job market isn't that great out there, and sometimes I worry about what's happening in this country as far as what kind of jobs are going to be offered to people that are $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt. And you hit the nail on the head earlier with your argument, Representative Obermueller, about the temp jobs out there and the whole industry that's cropped up, so people don't have the opportunity to get pensions and sometimes health insurance and everything else. And so if this committee tries to focus money on the classroom more than bureaucracy, I don't condemn anybody for trying to do that, because things are getting tougher and tougher out there, and it seems we have an atmosphere that a lot of people don't want to raise the revenue that I think we need to keep our state great. But that's a whole other issue. I'll save our speech, I'll save for a later date maybe. So here we have the A2 amendment. Any other comments, questions? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually would commend the chair and Representative Poppy. I can't tell you how many OLA reports I've seen just in the time I've been here, and it feels like the legislative committees don't fulfill their obligation of oversight and going deep into those things and holding the units accountable that are written up in those reports. So I totally support us being as engaged into to the level of detail that we are. Again, I just felt like we'd be just being a little overly prescriptive when there was some good board action already being taken. So anyway, I think kudos to you and the committee for going as deep into it as we are. It's appropriate.
Representative Downing, when I get done with you, you're going to be a flaming liberal. Okay, do we have any other amendments?
One more.
One more amendment. And then we will... we have a McFarland correction. We have a Poppy amendment. The amendment is A3. And this is an appropriation reduction. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This also is included in the finance bill. It just indicates again that if there is a reduction to the central office, that they cannot charge back to the institution to repay that reduction. It's in the omnibus finance bill, Mr. Chair. It's
okay.
Another place to put that.
This doesn't hurt, just in case something blows up over there. Got the amendment. We do have it in our finance omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Motion prevails. Representative McFarland has the
A4
amendment, which is basically Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair, this is the language about the student data that was omitted from the language that was in my previous bill. And we had pulled that section out to run on separately also, and it has passed through civil justice with an amendment, and this amendment here includes that amendment. So we were tightening up the language there.
I think we pulled it out. We won't run into any problems with any other committee since it did pass that committee.
Right, I don't believe so.
You've talked to, is it Mallory?
Yeah, it passed through his committee.
Representative Norton.
If I could just ask, it references the Achieve Scholarship, and we've gotten rid of that, and another girl, so I'm wondering about the programs.
Okay, we have the amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Is there anybody before we adjourn them that wants to talk for or against anything?
in the bill at all. If not, then we'll lay both of these bills over till tomorrow at 10:30 in room 10, and if there's any amendments on that, have them ready. If not, we can just walk in and move the bills on. Meeting adjourned.